Our reading is 2 Timothy 4, verses 1 to 8. In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who will judge the living and the dead, and in view of this appearing and his kingdom, I give you this charge. Preach the word. Be prepared, in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction. For the time will come when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them great numbers of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths. But you, keep your head in all situations. Endure hardship. Do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all the duties of your ministry. For I, Paul, am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, I think I should probably just give you my take on the marriage course that Anna talked about. Me being a bloke, I can only really remember two things from the course. The first is that one of the sessions was about the physical intimacy side of marriage. And the second thing is that the course includes practical homework. So there you go. I warmly commend the course to you. But we better concentrate on the letters to Timothy. In these two letters, we're coming to the final chapter of the second letter now. Paul has been addressing some big subjects, and we've drawn out some really high level principles about God and serving God and living as a faithful people, discipling one another through these letters. But remember that they are written to a specific context. They are written to Timothy in his situation. And so in the rest of the chapter, the bit that Karen didn't read this morning, I do recommend you go home and read it. You'll find that there's all kinds of practical stuff. He talks about, come and visit me, but be sure to come before winter. And he talks about the different colleagues, different people who are ministering in different places. There's practical details to sort out. He says, when you come, be sure to bring my cloak and my scrolls. Real people ministering in real situations. Paul and Timothy called to speak of Jesus to disciple others so that they too can speak about Jesus. If we go to the first slide, please, Ollie. The new key question for us, an out question, how we relate to other people, a question to take with you through the Christmas holiday. It's, where are you called to speak for Jesus? In the crowds of people, in the melee, in the practical context of your lives, where are you called to speak for Jesus? But through these personal notes that Paul writes in his closing stages of his letter, we also see a harsh reality. The reality that ministry can be a really lonely place from time to time. Lonely because people just don't get it. People just don't understand you. Even other Christians sometimes just don't understand what you're about. So lonely because people wander off. People go their own way. Paul talks in verse 9 and verse 16 of being deserted. Verse 14, there's some other guy, Alexandra, who was doing him real harm. And that happens and can leave you when you're trying to faithfully speak out for Jesus, feeling in a lonely, difficult place. Being let down is a real occurrence in ministry, something that you have to come to terms with. It will happen, it does happen. Here as a body of people, as a church, we talk a lot about covenanting together, about walking with each other through thick and thin. And there's a couple of aspects of covenanting together that I'd like to just remind us of this morning, that as people who want to covenant together, who want to walk with each other, that means that we'll walk with each other through thick and thin, and we'll try to do that even when the other person has annoyed us or hurt us. Not easy, but as part of our covenant, we'll try and work through that and see that there's a bigger picture that we are together in, and so try and persist beyond. The other aspect in our covenanting together will be honouring our commitment. And so if we say that we will do something, that we will do our best at all possible to do it. Or if we really can't do it, we'll at least try and let the other people know with good time, with good notice, that it's just not going to be possible. Walking with other people, and if we hold a significant role, then we'll try and see that through. And when it comes to the time to stand down, because there are times when things change, to try and give plenty of notice, to try and enable a smooth transition, because we are walking together and we have this covenant between each other. Now that's just to do those two things, among the many others in covenanting together, that is countercultural. I fear that our culture is actually leading in a different direction, in a direction that says, well, it's okay to ditch people if you happen to not like them anymore, or if they annoy you or hurt you in some way. It's okay to flip from one thing to another as the mood takes you, because our culture tells us that it's all about us. It's a me first culture. And so it conditions us to only do things if we feel like doing it. If we don't feel like doing it, well, we don't do it. We just move on to something else. And it takes no account being me first. It takes no account of how that might make other people feel. That's the tide of culture. That's something that we see. We have to lament, but we can go in a different direction. It's a difficult direction to go in, but it's different. It's covenanting together. It's actually being there for the other person. The incredible thing is that Paul actually experienced some of this himself, as he talked about being deserted and that, but he incredibly had great character. And he says, look, this Alexander guy, he's done me real harm, but let the Lord repay him. If there's anything to repay, let the Lord do that. He's not plotting and scheming and thinking, oh, one day I'll get that Alexander back. He'll see. No, he parks that and says, okay, God, you're just going to have to take that. You're just going to have to deal with that. It'd be wrong for me to go there. And for the people who deserted him, we guess maybe he was standing trial or something, and nobody else turned up to support him, He says, look, don't hold that against them. Maybe they had their reasons. I'm just going to let that go. Incredible character in doing that. But even if you can rise above those scenarios, those very real hurts, the loneliness is still there. I wish Paul had email. Because if he had email, then his co-workers, his colleagues, the other people on the ministry teams could have mitigated against Paul feeling lonely, could have helped him out by just sending a three-word email, sending to Paul, "I'm on it." Just a three-word email, "I'm on it." And Paul wouldn't have felt so lonely. Just a three-word email. There is a hint there for us. But let's go back to verse 1. Paul gives his final encouragement to Timothy. And he does so by reminding him of the urgency of the task. Remember, we've talked with the children. We're in this strange time, the now land, but we're looking ahead to the not yet land. We know that God will bring everything to its completion in the not yet land, and we can start to see some of that not yet in the now as we follow Jesus, but we're waiting and we're working and we're looking towards the not yet land. Well, Paul has not yet land completely in his view. He's got some kind of IMAX cinema surrounding his head with not yet land plastered all over it. That is where he's looking for. And he knows that that day is coming soon. He doesn't know when, but he knows it's coming soon. And each time he wakes up in the morning, he knows he is a day closer to that day coming. And so he has an urgency that in this space, this strange time before not yet land actually comes, it's our job to tell people about Jesus so that they can be embraced in not yet land as well. There is an urgency of the task. And so he's saying to Timothy, now you get on with the task. Remember, a part of discipleship is that you train people, you work with them, and then you release them. And say, look, now you go and do in your ministry the kind of things that I've been teaching you, but you do it in your own way, in your own place, in your own context. And releases him to do that. But he's saying, look, there's an urgency. Don't dawdle. Don't just hang around. Get on with the task. Because there will be that day when Jesus does come and wrap it all up. And in that day, he will be asking us, so what have you been doing? What have you been up to? Have you been willing to simply share with people why you do what you do is based on what you believe in Jesus? Will you be found doing that, or will you be found wanting? Jesus talks about the same thing. It's recorded in Luke's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 35. And he describes it as the master and the servants. And he says, look, the master's gone off on a long, long business trip. But one day he will come back to the office. And when he returns, what will he find you doing in the office? Attending to the task, the company business, or otherwise? There is an urgency. Well, what is the urgency for? The urgency for is to preach the word. Now, there's a test here. For those of you who were here last week, you need to fill in the gaps for those who weren't here last week. Preach the words. What does the words mean? Who can tell me from last week? It's a five-letter word. Begins with J. Jesus, well done, thank you. It's not that hard. Really. The word is tell people all about Jesus. That's the words. Remember, John's Gospel, chapter 1, and then all those occurrences, 12 in Acts and in Revelation. The word is Jesus. Tell people about him. Point people to him. Lead people to him. Be prepared to explain your faith. And he says, be prepared in season and out of season. In other words, cover all bases. Always be prepared to speak up. So, key question. Where are you called to speak for Jesus? In season and out of season. Now, out of season, I don't necessarily think that that means being completely insensitive and just barging in a bull into a china shop and making a right mess. Because he goes on to say, do this with correction, encouragement, great patience, and careful instruction. So show some sensitivity, but be prepared in season and out of season, whether it's convenient or not convenient. The word season could be translated convenient there. Irony, big time. Just as I was finishing my preparation for this, the doorbell went to answer the door, and there were some Jehovah's Witnesses on my door, and I was like thinking, look, I'm trying to finish my sermon here. Be prepared. In season, out of season, whether the doorbell rings when it's convenient or not, to talk about Jesus. Jesus as Lord. Jesus as Son of God. Jesus who is God come to our world in human form. Interestingly, with this convenience thing, we may be tempted to not talk about Jesus when it is not convenient for us, but we need to learn to even say, even when it's not convenient for us. And again, that's countercultural. Our me-first attitude in culture would say, look, only do it if you feel like it. Well, Paul doesn't give Timothy that option. And I don't think Jesus really wants to give us that option. It's not a case of, do we feel like it? This is the task. There is an urgency about it. But let's face reality. As Paul says in verse 3 and 4, there's going to be times, there's going to be people who just don't want to hear. They've got other stuff they would rather hear to. Now be honest. We've all been in places where we've only wanted to listen to the stuff that we want to hear. Maybe in the marriage course you kind of sort some of those things out. I don't know. But we always have those times when we will only listen. Usually it's when we're seeking guidance. And we have something in mind as to what the guidance should be. We've kind of preset the answer. And so we go to different people and say, can you just help me figure out whatever? But of course, actually, you're trying to find the person who's going to tell you the thing that you want to do anyway to justify. There will be those times. But Paul says, keep talking about Jesus anyway, in season and out of season. And then in verse 5, he says, keep your head. Right? Take that as rise above these situations. If people don't want to listen, they're opposing or bouncing off any which way, keep your head, rise above it. Keep your focus on Jesus. It's him we want to talk about. He says, endure hardship. In other words, at the end of it all, when you've tried your best, whether it's gone well or whether it's been a total disaster, it doesn't matter in a sense, just be still standing at the end of the day. The success of it is not down to you. The success of it is God's job. Your role is to preach the word, to speak about Jesus, keep your head, and still be standing at the end of the day. And then he says to Timothy, do the work of an evangelist. Do the work of evangelists. Kind of, maybe Timothy was one of those people who didn't particularly have gifts of evangelism. And that's no surprise, because people who do research on these things figure that only 1 in 10 Christians have direct, clear gifts of evangelism. So Timothy's in the majority, if that's the case. But Paul says, you might not have the gifts directly for this. You may be gifted in other places, but still do the work of evangelism, because we are all called to pitch in, whether we are particular evangelists or not. All called to pitch in. We may pitch in different ways, in different styles, of course that's absolutely fine, but all called to pitch in some way. So where are you called to speak for Jesus? And the next slide, please, Ollie, our challenge for you. Explain what you do is because of your faith in Jesus. Be prepared to explain to people that the reason you do what you do, the way you live your life, how you live it, traces back to your faith in Jesus. I found when I was working in engineering, typically on a business trip with a colleague, and on a business trip with a colleague on a plane, in a taxi, the hotel bar or whatever, you get those moments to talk more laterally rather than just about the work or the project or the colleagues. You start talking about your lives. And people would say to me, maybe in a taxi ride to the company we're going to see, say, well, there's something different about you, Carlo. Well, you live your life differently. That's the golden moment to say, well, yes, but this is all because of my faith in Jesus. Leads me to these conclusions, leads me to these values that I'm trying to put into practice. And that's all it needs sometimes. To say, look, I do what I do because of my faith in Jesus. Does that make any sense to you? And go from there. That's your challenge. Over the Christmas period, into the new year. To seize one of those moments to simply explain to someone, this is what I'm about. This is why I do this stuff, because of my faith. You see, verses 6 to 8 sum up Paul's life. His focus, as I've said, is on not yet lands. The glory of Jesus and the prospect of being caught up in it. He says, I am already being poured out like a drink offering, kind of relating to Old Testament offerings. And there he's saying, look, my life is just simply being poured out, spilt on the ground as an offering before God. His life is given over to Christ. His life is given over, if necessary, to die for Christ. We think that he's actually writing these letters, maybe even from a prison cell, under trial, under threat of execution. In verse 7, you get that sense he expects to be killed. He's kind of talking about as if he's going to go on in ministry, but he's also talking about this could be my last letter. This could be my last chance. Come and see me before winter. It might be too late after winter. His life is spent, utterly devoted to the cause. And let me share two modern-day stories of trying to simply put ourselves ready to tell people about Jesus. Recently, only a few of you will know this, but recently at the food bank, I was physically threatened. Someone offered to smash my face in. Now, that's not because of particularly of my faith in Jesus. They were upset with something about the food bank and some technicality and stuff. But because of my faith in Jesus, we will do things like the food bank. We will help people, even though that puts us in the front line. And with that is the risk that the front line may become the firing line, because that's what we do, because of our faith in him. And then a few weeks ago, Karen and I went to a conference, and one of the speakers was a guy from Beirut, the principal of the Beirut Baptist Bible College. And he was explaining how things have changed so much for them as a church in Lebanon. He was explaining how as a minority faith group, Christians with Muslims in the majority, they used to always be worried about how they can protect themselves, protect their culture, protect their ability to worship, protect their church and the fabric and the way they do life and all that stuff. They were always worried about, and so they kind of had this enclosed, walled-in mentality in their thinking. And he said it even affected our theology, our understanding of God. But of course, recently, Lebanon has loads and loads of Syrian refugees. We're worried here in England about a few thousand. There they've got 2 million or so, I think it is, that kind of figure. Refugees everywhere. And they realized that their call, their urgency of task before the Lord Jesus was to simply share their faith with these refugees, to help as much as possible, wherever possible, and share their faith. And in doing so, God changed them as a church. They realized that their walls of protecting came down as they simply went out and helped. And of course, they've been able to physically help loads and loads of people, but more importantly, spiritually help so many, and people have come to faith in Jesus from all kinds of backgrounds, from Muslim backgrounds and other backgrounds. And the church, as we saw on the video, similar situation, the churches are packed with people coming in to discover life in Jesus. Because they lowered their guard and realized that the call, the urgency, the need to preach the words, practically with help and with words, overrode everything else. And it changed them. It changed their priorities and changed what they were able to do. So for us, where are you called to speak for Jesus? Are you able to take the challenge to simply explain to someone why you do what you do is because of your faith in Jesus?